Here, the old gods are dead.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, this is the Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
Hi.
How's your week been, Liam?
My week has been so good. So I did the most unprofessional thing I've ever done in my life. I like fought with a lecturer over emails. She started it, though. Anyway, in other news this week, new variant just dropped. Happy Omicron. No, the fact that it spread in Scotland at a Steps concert, the tweet that was like, how many cases were there again? 5, 6, 7, 8? That actually, that took me out.
I'm not being funny, but like, gone to Steps, getting a new variant of COVID, like, maybe it's on your A-need at that point.
Yeah, you deserved it.
Although it must be said, 5, 6, 7, 8's a tune. A great day for journalism where journalists could finally get a pun headline in tragedy.
I hate that. I also was something, obviously I didn't enjoy it because it interrupted so many people's lives, like Storm Arwen. But it just makes me laugh because Arwen is such like a
Lord of the Rings kind of name.
I was going to say beta, but like, yeah. it just made me laugh.
So there's another storm coming the night, though, I hear.
Honey, you got it.
My manager will be hearing
coming
about that in the morning when I don't want to go into work. I actually shouldn't have said that. He might listen.
No, he won't. Let's be real. You should be like, sorry, the wind blew my car away. I can't come in today.
It's a Kia Picanto. It probably will get blown away. That was my excuse for leaving early when Storm Arwen hit. I was like, sorry, but my car will take off if I didn't get here.
No, like the scene in The Wizard of Oz where the witch is on their bike in the middle of the Twister. That's your
me.
You wee car. Anyway, I've not done any research for this episode because, again, I've been busy dealing with things that everyone else is dealing with also. So I haven't been able to have time to do anything. So Becca's got a little surprise for me. What are we talking about today, doll?
So in our last episode, I spoke about a murder that was committed by James II of Scotland. And he murdered a member of this family that he's like really strongly tied to. They're called the Douglases. And like throughout his life, they like crop back up again and again. And his life has actually been like an inspiration for Game of Thrones in more than one way, I would say. So I thought, since we reference Game of Thrones so much, that I would actually do one of the inspirations for a story that's in Game of Thrones. Obviously, down the line at some point, we'll do the Glencoe Massacre, which is also an inspiration for Game of Thrones, but I thought this would be quite a fun thing today. Well, no fun, because it involves child murder, but...
Wait, I thought these were the same thing.
No, they
are. I thought what you're talking about...
It's two separate. It's two separate events. I will get into it, but it's.
Famed,
I mean, it's
historian,
not
Liam Nielsen.
I'm not gonna make like too much light of it or try not to, because one part you'll ken when I get to it is like pretty grim. But anyway,
yeah, it's all fucked up.
So this is in four parts, four acts. So the first act his young life. So the Stuart family and their court all breathed a big sexist sigh of relief when Queen Regent Joan Beaufort, wifey James I, gave birth to twin boys on October 16th, 1430, securing the male succession of the crown following the birth of four daughters. The, I think this would make James the First a James the Second a Libra.
Oh no. not another one.
Another one.
I can't stand this, honestly.
The elder twin, Alexander, died in infancy and then left his younger brother to become heir to the throne. Naming the second son James continued his father's name, a trend that the Stuart monarchs would continue right up until James the Sixth. I thought I would get that in really early. James would be nicknamed...
How long does it take us to reference James the Sixth per episode?
It's a Game of Thrones episode today, so I thought I would just get that out of the way. James would be nicknamed the King with Fire on His Face, or simply Fiery Face. Because he had a huge cherry blossom birthmark that covered basically half of his face. There is one really contemporary portrait of him, which is a really good likeness, because I think it's an artist from Denmark did it. So he was really under the influence of trying to make the king look a wee bit better than, not that there's anything wrong with a cherry blossom birthmark, of course, but any other art that's been done by court artist, that birthmark doesn't actually appear. If you Google him, it's not there. It's either been painted over or it's been touched up a wee bit.
Yeah, I would like to say that Cherry Blossom Birthmark is a really good indie band name.
So if anybody wants to take that,
it's already patented. It's on. We have patented it here right now on this pod. So please don't even try it. Anyway, continue.
So when James II was six, his father was assassinated in Perth in a plot that involved members of his own family. And this was in February 1437. James's mum would be injured in this assassination, but she would eventually escape and be reunited with her son in Edinburgh Castle or Holyrood Palace. It's not actually said, it just says that she escapes to Edinburgh. The assassination wasn't actually a popular plot, but it had grown out of frustrations of the king's advisors, a majority of whom were his relatives, who had gotten really tired of his resistance to their influences. And so they basically just decided that if they killed him, a boy king would be much easier to influence and control. I mean, good for them for not just deposing the boy king. At least they let him live.
This is, again, you're right, very Game of Thrones, actually, already.
This is where the Game of Thrones stuff kind of starts.
Yeah.
All this, family infighting. And it was another branch of the Stuarts that wanted James the First dead. So the involvement of James's brother Walter Stuart and his son Robert Stuart shows that the murder was intended to shift power from one side of the Stuart family into the hands of another. And that it did, because Walter Stuart, Earl of Athol, was appointed into the minority government known as the King's Council, which would act on behalf of the crown until James became of age. James was coronated in March, following his father's death, and Archibald Douglas, Duke of Tyrone and 5th Earl of Douglas. There's going to be a lot of really long names, by the way, in this episode.
Yeah. I was this is going to a private school function or something. You're what's your name? Archibald Douglas Stuart. Oh,
yeah, where's my baby? Archibald Douglas, Duke of Tyrone, 5th Earl of Douglas, was appointed Lieutenant General, which basically made him the young king's representative and head of the king's council. So essentially he was acting as king whilst James was a boy. At this point in time, there's a lot of kind of jobs for the boys politics gone on. Sound familiar? So the most significant the most significant move at this point in time is that the uncle of Archibald, James Douglas, is appointed onto the King's Council as well. He's basically the admin, but he does have a lot of influence later on.
Yeah.
The King's Council, heavily controlled by the Douglases, worked to repair relationships with powerful families who had been alienated by James I, because he had quite a strong temper as well, but if anybody defied him or annoyed him in any way, he would completely oust them for court. So the Douglases spent a lot of these early years trying to get an image of stability back into the Scottish court, and it did work, but not in a way where it favoured the crown, it favoured the King's Council. Does that make sense?
Of course. Yeah.
The fifth Earl of Douglas actually died of fever in 1439. So this is only like 2 years into James's, like, what is it called?
Reign.
Reign, yeah. All right, so the fifth Earl of... I'm going to do that again. That's so dumb. I'm talking about more.
No, give it. I enjoy it. I enjoy being the smart one for 5 seconds.
Nice. Right, fine, I'll keep it in. So he dies of fever and he leaves an heir, William, who's only 16. In fact, when he dies, it means that there's only 3 adult earls in Scotland at the time who are in power. So this power vacuum that this causes leads to several outbreaks of factional violence and tension that would shape the political map of Scotland. So this is the Game of Thrones stuff. This is when Robert Baratheon dies in Game of Thrones.
Not this.
So this laid the foundation for the friction between James II and the Black Douglas family that would explode over the next 2 decades. So, Act 2, The Black Dinner. After Archibald's death, power was shared amongst William Crichton, First Lord Crichton and Lord Chancellor of Scotland, Sir Alexander Livingstone of Callander, and James Douglas, Earl of Avondale, who's Archibald Douglas's uncle. Really hard to keep track of all this. I actually read the book in preparation for this, and I had to keep going back to the references because I had no idea what the fuck I was reading.
I keep trying to jump into this, and I'm like, who?
I should have probably sent you a family.
Which one's James?
I went literally. You can go onto these people's Wikipedias because I would be reading the book. What is it called? I'll put it up on Instagram. It is a really good book. It was written by a historian for St. Andrews University, and it is really detailed. But I would be reading the players in this game, basically, and I would be going onto their Wikipedias, and they're all so influential in Scotland at this time that they've all, every single one of them, has their own Wikipedia entry, which isn't actually that common.
Yeah, that's... Because every other episode we recorded, it's been you go to this person, and then you try and find out where the other person is from, and it's like a 2-sentence Wikipedia entry.
Yeah, these people...
So this is nice.
These people made moves. And no in a very good way, as we'll get on to.
Yeah.
So Archibald's time as regent led to his side of the Douglas family growing ever more powerful and influential over the lowlands of Scotland. And they were seen as a threat to the stability of the nation. But it's more likely that they were actually a threat to the King's Council. So... In 1448, Crichton, Livingstone and James Douglas conspired to break the power that Archibald Douglas's family had on Scotland and invited the 16-year-old William Douglas, 6th Earl of Douglas, and his younger brother, who was 12, to Edinburgh Castle. So these are babies.
That's a child.
It's no very good. What's going to happen? Why they're inviting these two boys to Edinburgh Castle? So
I don't want
to. According to the legend, the Douglas brothers were invited to dine in the great banquet hall. Sorry, nothing good ever comes with meeting James II in a dining hall.
Yeah, no. I know that much.
They're having dinner with the 10-year-old James, and apparently he's really taken with them, especially the older William Douglas. Apparently he was a really noble and intelligent man, which is obviously really threatening. But James and them are kind of getting their crack on. At the end of the feast, the wooden doors at the end of the hall open, and a servant walks in with a big silver platter that has a black bull's head on it. And it's paraded around in front of the boys, and then it's set on the table in front of them. No.
I knew about this.
Yeah, this is creepy.
I've heard that.
This is kind of in Game of Thrones during the Red Wedding when the Reigns of Castamere start playing, because the black bull in Scottish tradition is a symbol for death.
I knew that because I was researching it today. I was wait. I wonder if Becca will research this because I want it to feel useful. But of course, you're 3 steps ahead.
If you have anything to say about why the black bull's head is a superstition, because I couldn't find anything on that. I found a fairy tale, which I made note of because I will speak about that at some point in another episode.
I couldn't find anything. I just knew that it was that. I'm pretty sure that's not the only documented time of it being used as a threat symbol.
Well,
but I read that some people associated it with the fact that there was cows being used as livestock commonly in this era when it was big. So if that was your main life source, I guess But also in all cultures, bulls are sort of like a sign of fertility.
Yeah, well, I've seen the new adaptation in Dune, and there's black bull's heads everywhere. And I thought this was like, and that along with the bagpipes, I kind of thought that was what they were referencing.
I would never have thought of that.
Well, they're like above
you. They're
like above the door, but before. I was just about to spoil like one of the biggest films of the year, but girlies, I'm not going to lie, it's shit.
Nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
No, oh my God, I'm so glad we're finally talking about this. Something I can get in. I cannot. This was literally like a 3-hour long perfume ad for Zendaya. Like, it was insane. Like, she's in every trailer, but when I tell you she had like 4 spoken words in that entire film, I mean it. Like, until like the last half hour, I was like, wait, is, and then I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to watch another one of these films, aren't I?
I read some of Dune, and I normally like high fantasy books, and obviously it's fantasy sci-fi, it's kind of like space Game of Thrones. But the amount of times that I had to go back to the glossary, I was like, nah, I can't fuck this. Like, maybe this is just a wee bit beyond my capacity, because it kept breaking my immersion having to go back to the glossary all the time. Anyway, we're like in
the soundtrack and the visuals.
Oh, definitely.
We're insane.
Definitely. Like the imagery, the black bull and stuff. Oh, look at me getting back on topic. So like, we're in the middle of one of the like most gruesome stories in Scottish history, and we decide to talk about Timothy Chalamet. So at the end of the feast, the wooden doors open, the black bull's brought in, and James, seeing this, like, Ken's what's about to happen, because obviously he's like very well educated, even though he's a child. He's basically an adult. Yeah. Like, people in these times do get treated like children, at these times got treated like adults. He begins to plead for their lives, but the boys were quickly dragged out of the hall and into the courtyard. There's a mock trial put on. I think the older Douglas, William, begins to like plead for his wee brother's life. He's like, right, if I'm such a threat, kill me. Like, just let him live.
Oh no, that's. Oh.
But the executioner, under the influence of like Crichton Livingston and their uncle Douglas, they are found guilty and they're both beheaded in front of James. This is what I was referring to in the Ghost of Stirling Castle episode. Like, I think that this event had a really like lasting impact on James's temper, because he's obviously like witnessed this kind of violence, like, as a child, and then has like been like, oh, is this how you deal with issues? Like,
oh my God, love that. Creepy Wee Podcast takes on analytical psychology. Here we go. I've been waiting.
I did a psychology class once. No. So this event heavily inspired George R.R. Martin's Storm of Swords, which is the third book in his epic series, A Song of Ice and Fire. In what is known as the Red Wedding Massacre, it occurs at a wedding feast, and the 17-year-old Robb Stark, who is a threat to the Iron Throne, is murdered alongside his mother. The story and the portrayal on the TV series Game of Thrones shocked readers and viewers alike, and in response, George R.R. Martin said this. Liam, read your little quote.
Oh, yeah, I get something to do. I have a spoken part now. No matter how much I make up, there's stuff in history that's just as bad or worse. Such a wordsmith. Such a wordsmith.
I mean, it is.
It was good.
It's obviously, the Red Wedding's much worse. The way that plays out is pretty horrible. It was horrible seeing it on screen as well. Yeah. Like, that was, what a moment when that happened.
There is so much in the chapter in the book. There is so much detail.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of.
Like, I feel like it wasn't necessary.
There's a lot of different points of view throughout the entire event. Say, like, it's not just like it's gone to like it's one person's point of view through the entire thing. It likes like a lot of people get to say their piece. Obviously, like the fact that like this happened in history and it was a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old boy. Killed by their own uncle in front of another 10-year-old.
That's insane.
Scottish history is so fucked.
Yes. Yes, and you should say it.
Yeah.
You've always said
that. I have always said that. That's the whole premise of this podcast. I'm like, it's so fucked. Don't you agree that this is fucked up?
That was super bad and we shouldn't do it again.
So we're going to take a wee break and then I'll get on to Act 3, which is the murder at Stirling Castle, which I went there briefly in our last episode, but I think it would be better to go like through it in heavier detail. So we'll take a wee break and then I'll come back and speak about that.
This episode of the Creepy Wee Podcast is sponsored by Pulse CBD. Pulse CBD is a UK-based family-run business that offers a range of CBD-based products, from oil drops to delicious vegan jelly sweeties, as well as bath bombs and a pet range. CBD is a cannabidiol that has some incredible benefits, from inflammatory pain relief, muscle recovery, alleviating anxiety and depression, and even reducing acne. For more information, visit www.pulsecbd.co.uk. And don't forget to use the code NEWBIE at the checkout for 20% off your first order.
Oh my god, so when you were going away from that break, so context, Becca tried to find a way to put subtitles on the podcast episode so like everyone could engage with it, like even people that like can't hear. And when we were going away from the break, when she was like, gonna go air, and then I was like, I know she's saying over, but no wonder the like quotes can't pick her up. I'm like, come on, Scott, you better
what is it called? The transcription service that I tried to use. One thought me and Liam were the same woman.
We thought
man.
Try.
And then could not hear anything I was saying. Like I think it was like a bit where I was like saying, and I think I did like episode 3, so it was like Scottish customs and superstitions. So I was saying Boo and She, and the transcription thing kept going Da Vinci, Da Vinci.
Da Vinci.
And I was like, right, Kenwa, we kinda do this until we make money. So we tried to be inclusive, like we really did, but
we did, but it wasn't on the card.
I genuinely didn't have enough time to like work full time and transcribe a whole podcast. So one day it will come. But
if anyone else wants to do it, feel free. Yeah, we're just both
we had one volunteer. We had one volunteer, but like it would require like a few people. Like I'm not just going to make one person do that. Anyway, as I discussed in the last episode, during much James's early life, Archibald Douglas had gained a lot of power, being headed the King's Council, and then the power of the Douglases only grew when James Douglas had shared power with Crichton and Livingston. So by the time that James II was an adult, he was really struggling to gain control of his kingdom. So James Douglas's son, William, 8th Earl Douglas, while he was in Rome, attempts to gain back power for the Douglases properly began. In 1451, the king accused the Earl, probably with a lot of justification, of forging links with John MacDonald, who was Lord of the Isles, and Alexander Lindsay, who was the 4th Earl of Crawford. Now, this is a threat because these were two powerful men who really didn't give a shit about what James said. And they were like free thinking men, basically. They didn't think that
they were
like the Stuarts thought that they were like God given, like they had a God given right to the throne. And Crawford and Alexander Lindsay and John MacDonald were like, nah, like we didn't care. Like we're smarter than you, we're richer than you, we're probably more powerful than you are. And William Douglas was like, no, you're right.
That's kind of giving Miss Trunchbull, I'm big, you're small. And you're small. Yeah.
So the bond of these men created a major threat to the crown, and then hearing this accusation, William immediately returned to Rome to meet with the king in order to settle things at court in Stirling. He dined with the king and had a chat with him, and Douglas refused to break his bonds with Ross and Lindsay, and then James breaks it into a fitty temper and stabs Douglas 26 times and throws his body out a window.
Oh, that's the story from last week.
Yeah. So, and then his court officials, many of whom would like rise to a greater influence ere the years following this, often rising to power in former Douglas lands. Because they jumped in and like joined in the bloodbath, allegedly one of them struck out the William Douglas's brain with an axe. So this landed favourably with James, so And like, it wasn't like that crazy to everybody else that he was doing this, but like in hindsight, like this is a bit unhinged. Well, not a bit, like a lot. I'm very much of the mind, and I said this in the last episode and in this episode as well, that I didn't think James's violent outburst would have been so bad had he not been like witness to like what Scottish court is actually like when the Black Dinner occurred.
Yeah.
Like he did have a temper, but like stabbing, like he went from zero to stabbing somebody 26 times out of frustration. Like obviously it was really frustrating for James that he couldn't like run his court the way that he wanted to, and that the Douglases were more influential than him. Like it really, really pissed him off. Clearly. But like
spoiled child, like I'm in
like,
charge.
Like, I don't know, like, I am of the mind that, like, this wouldn't have been, like, so bad had he not been at the Black Dinner.
No, you're anyway. Right. That'll fuck you up. I say that like I know I've...
This murder didn't end the power of the Douglases, but it rather created a state of intermittent civil war between 1452 and 1455. So, mere Game of Thrones kind of stuff goes on. So, there's small battles that take place in Broderick, the Isle of Arran, Renfrew, and the Battle of Arkenholm. James attempted to seize Douglas lands, but his opponents always forced him back into really humiliating withdrawals. In the end, he did actually return the lands to James Douglas, 9th Earl of Douglas, and a short tenuous peace ensued. It's actually argued that during this time, James was really close to being overthrown, but it seems that he was able to ride it out. And eventually, James won the Battle of Arkenholm, and this essentially put the Douglases to bed. And the Parliament of Scotland declared that Douglas lands would be forfeit and handed permanently to the crown, which James was able to dish out to the people who supported him when he murdered the 8th Earl of Douglas.
Yeah.
The 9th Earl of Douglas fled to England in exile, and James was finally able to have the freedom to rule the way that he wanted to.
Aw, good for her.
So
wait, are we on his side? I'm confused. Is he the good guy? Is he the bad guy? I mean, history's told by the winners, but like, who are we rooting for?
I don't think there's ever been a monarch in Scottish history who's ever had such a tenuous time on the throne. Like, maybe
so
Jules
like
ever
for him?
Been. I don't think so. I feel bad for him. I feel bad for him because of like the Black Dinner and because his dad got murdered and he didn't like him. Like, folk just took power away from him before he could even have it. But then again, I didn't really believe in monarchies, so yeah. do I care?
Okay, well, so we're what's it, ambivalent? Is that when you don't care?
What's impartial.
That? Impartial.
So, James, this is part four, the death of James II, because he did not have an easy ride. Like, I will say that, like, even...
Yeah, he took L after L. Like, he...
Yeah.
He fucked.
Like, it was really bad. Like, I can see why he maybe wanted to stab somebody 26 times. It must have been really frustrating. So,
been there, sister.
James was mad for military artillery. Like, if he lived the day, he would probably be one of the, like, weird preppy people who has like a bunker and like loads of guns and stuff, like military rations, like maybe like that. So
yeah,
after using them to defeat the Black Douglases in the Battle of Arkenholm, he set his sight on reclaiming Roxburgh Castle, which was one of the last castles still under English control following the Wars of Independence. For the siege, James brought loads of cannons that he had imported from Flanders. I'm so sorry, James, but this is actually so embarrassing. So on August 30th, 1460, James was standing next to a cannon that was called the Lion when it exploded and killed him. a witness said that, like, literally, like, it wasn't even, like, gone to fire anybody. It had just exploded. And a witness said that he had been struck... that his thigh had been struck in two by a piece of shrapnel for the cannon and that he had fell to the ground and died very quickly. So I'm guessing that this huge chunk of cannon had hit him in his femoral artery and that he bled out. This is so shit.
That's so, like, that's actually, like, horrible, but, like, it's kind of funny that everything in his, like, I mean, it was hundreds of years ago, so we don't care anymore. It's not a real person. But, like, everything just fucked for him, huh? Like, that's so cartoonish, like, luck.
I know. There's like a pretty horrible image, like the lion blowing up, and like other people were injured and died as well.
That's what you get for naming a cannon the lion.
But in a twist of luck, the Scots actually went on to siege the castle, led by George Douglas, 4th Earl of Angus. Different Douglases, by the way. Okay. These people were called the Red Douglases.
Different Douglas, but, different Earl.
They actually fought. They fought with James against the Black Douglases. They're like related. They're a different branch of the family.
Do you know what? This story is as complex as June, actually. Like, I feel like I need a glossary. I'm confused. I'm very lost.
So George Douglas captures the castle, and James's widow, Mary, ordered its destruction. Like, as soon as they win it, she was like, tear that fucking thing down. James's son would become king, James the Third, and Mary would act as regent until her own death 3 years later. So okay, that's the poor, unfortunate life of James the Second and his struggle with the Black Douglases. That is what he's known for.
Like, that sucks for him. Honestly.
He was kind of known as like an eccentric ruler. He was the first person to like charge violent crimes. So he like raised a lot of money that way, because obviously Scotland was quite a violent country at this point, as we've heard.
At this point,
he did a lot of traveling around collecting like artillery and stuff. But he's the main thing that he's kent for is the Black Douglases. Like, they continue to overshadow him, even in death.
We feel bad for him. We're not impartial or unbiblical.
This is really difficult, because I want to feel bad for him, but then like stabbing somebody 26 times just for
but we all have those days.
Free thinking. I don't know. I don't care what they think. People, let me care what you think about this. I don't like the Douglases either. The Red Douglases sound cool, like the one who captured the castle. But the people who were like, Archibald Douglas is apparently like the Ned Stark of this story, so maybe we like him. But
yeah,
like,
he's hot.
He never really did anything wrong. He didn't kill anybody. His sons got killed for no good reason.
His sons, they're the one.
They're the ones that died in the back dinner.
All right, okay.
He died of fever, and then his son and heir got killed, and then his youngest son got killed as well.
There's no whimsy to medicine anymore. Like, you wouldn't get like died of fever. Like, that is so
literally, you could just take an ibuprofen and it would have been fine.
R.I.P. But no, dead ass. Like, oh, that's kind of cute. Like, died of fever. Now it's like we've had like fucking MRSA or whatever it's called.
You can really see how the like themes of this story and like all the infighting and like small civil wars and stuff is Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
like 100%.
I'm assuming at this point everyone who listens to us watches Game of Thrones, because if they don't, I'm so sorry. Also, we're not like.
Like, oh, we hate Game of Thrones. Like, the last season was so shit that I do not claim to like it anymore, but apparently it had such an impact on the last, like, 10 years of my life that I'll never shut up about it, even though I'm so severely bitter.
Yes, like, I need to, like, close it off with, like, we're not losers. Like, I swear, I'm not a normie. I listen to Arca. I'm different. I'm not like other guys.
Well, that's the Scottish Game of Thrones and, like, the real story behind the Red Wedding. One day in the future, we will do the other influence of the Red Wedding, which is the Glencoe Massacre. Aye, but on our next episode, we're going to have a special guest on, and we're going to have a nice, fun, wintery, Christmassy story to tell you.
You're going to love it. Oh my God, I'm going to pop off in the next episode. I have such fun anecdotal stories about this. No, you're going to be obsessed. You're gagging for it. You're dying for it. Get off my back. Follow us on Twitter at The Creepy Wee Pod. Follow us on Instagram, The Creepy Wee Podcast. Follow our OnlyFans, Creepy. No, I'm kidding. Also, what else do we have?
We have a TikTok, The Creepy Wee Podcast. We do have a TikTok. I make the TikTok. And then.
When?
You follow it, you dick. Sorry. I literally texted you last night being like, I think I'm going to make another TikTok. And you were like,
and I probably replied, play.
Anyway, we also have a website called thecreepyweepodcast.co.uk where you can read blog posts and see what me and Liam are really like.
The website really actually pops off. Like, I need more of you to go there because it's actually fun to look at. I enjoy a well-designed web page, and it is one.
Yeah.
Period.
Because I designed it, that's why.
Not Becca. I was trying to, like, not say that you do all the work.
You're literally like, do we have a TikTok?
What could I make? Well, I made us a Habbo Hotel. Oh, we have a Habbo Hotel as well at the Creepy Podcast.
This episode's so ADHD, like...
This episode is like...
End it.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.